Sam, you're a Niner fan, correct? If I remember correctly.
I once upon a time was. They're once a little bit tough to root for.
I know, right?
But yes, I may have a Jerry Rice and Joe Montana poster in my garage.
So if you had a choice between toast, bagel, or English muffin, which one do you go with?
I thought we were doing the arena question.
No, switched it.
The stadium question. I'm going to go, I think it was Katie who was championing sourdough toast, which I literally just finished with some nice fried egg on top.
All right.
Okay. So, highest protein intake of the toasts.
But of those, yeah, a lot of protein.
Yeah.
The bagel is pretty legit. And just to muddy the waters, I'm going to add in, you know, I'm kind of a crepe guy. I know that's a different genre.
Oh, well, listen, if you're going to get crepes involved, that's not fair.
It's some beignets, you know, in there, too.
Nutella and banana.
There's nothing better to me for breakfast than sourdough toast with sliced avocado and salt and pepper.
Ooh, very nice. Yeah. I like that.
What? I mean,
you guys would be, you might not be impressed, but I'm impressing myself of late. We've converted, we got our two small boys, as you guys know. And they were doing the cereal thing for the longest time, but there's obviously not a ton of nutrition in cereal. So in the mornings, in about a 15 or 20 minute span, I put my little. I'm not a good cook at all, but when it comes to the egg game, I'm whipping out, you know, three quick order different versions of eggs in the morning and getting everybody out the door. So that's my morning contribution is toast and eggs and trying to make it work.
Look at you, Sam. You don't just go lazy and go cereal. You actually cook for the kids.
We did for the longest time, man, but you sit there and study it, and there's so much sugar, and then it doesn't, you know, I don't know. I know this is now becoming the nutrition
morning sports talk show. We're going to do this for 20 minutes. Screw it.
You know, I kid you not, we were just driving to school and having this philosophical morning discussion with the little ones about how, hey, you know, don't you feel better when you eat an egg versus a little bit of milk and some stuff out of a cardboard box?
Of course. So, yeah. So
I'm on board.
So that being said, then let's get into it now. Let's do this until the end of the season. Where have we changed our MVP power rankings at all in the last week?
No, I don't think so. 2 weeks ago, well, I think we talked about this. It was I had switched to Westbrook, and then over, you know, instead of Harden, and then literally like the our votes are a little tough because we vote on a Sunday. They don't come out until Monday, and then obviously in between, especially with the way this MVP race is, anything can happen. So, you know, I voted for Westbrook, and then Harden had an amazing game on a Sunday night. But now I think 2 weeks in a row I've been back to Harden. But, you know, it's still close, in my opinion. Russ goes out and turns in a perfect triple-double, which has never happened, which was something else. So – I've enjoyed the debate. Not only, I mean, it's nonstop. It's with you guys when I'll come on. I did an NBA TV thing the other day. I thought was fascinating because Isaiah Thomas had weighed in, and not the Celtics Isaiah Thomas, the original. And you know, he was stumping for Kawhi Leonard, which I kind of thought Kawhi was out of the race, and then you still hear his name. So I think it's still pretty tight.
Yeah, you know, to me, it's kind of crazy at this point because this is one of the more interesting MVP races to me, Sam, in memory, really. I don't remember it ever being so back and forth and there being so many names kind of in it. I think that Isaiah Thomas, the player, current player, you know, former King, current Celtic, has put up a phenomenal season, but maybe a top five season, but he's not really in it. But you've got four guys that really are. And it's crazy to me to hear you say that you go back and forth like, oh, well, then he had a good game last night. And then, oh, well, the next night Westbrook comes out and has a good game. Like, that's crazy to me because usually at this point in the season, it's pretty clear to people who's having that MVP season. Do you really think it's going to come down to like the final, you know, when your guys' vote goes in and it's you're going to be going in undecided and it's going to be based on who's had the better game most recently?
I mean, for some people, I think those, you know, that is going to sway votes. I think for one, people have made the observation that I agree with that the way the voting system works, it's probably going to, it potentially is going to wind up being like a maddening result, meaning that the second and third place votes are going to really come into play heavily. You know, you can't forget this thing's kind of weighted. And there are times when it's like, oh, man, this guy got so many first-place votes, but the other guy got so many second and thirds, and he ends up winning. So maybe we have some controversy. I still do think, in general, that Harden, if I just had to guess, I think he's got a decent little lead, but who knows? I wow. also, and I feel like, you know, I'll probably tweet this in the next couple of days. I told someone the other day, like almost as a service to my colleagues in trying to get this message out there, I feel like literally announcing to the media as a whole, like, hey, if you were thinking, you know, because you can start to get your votes in relatively soon here. If you were thinking about voting early, just don't. You know, if you're busy and you're thinking, yeah, I want to get it behind me and I got stuff to do, so I'm going to just get the MVP vote in, just don't do it, because inevitably some amazing stuff's going to happen in the last couple of days. And I feel like of all seasons, to your point, Katie, this is one of those where, you know, you got to let the whole body of work come to an end, or at least darn near close to it, before actually voting.
Speaking with Sam Amick on KHTK, so it's put aside the debate over who's actually going to win it. A lot of times you'll get guys that'll, I don't want to call them, like, they're kind of courtesy votes, where you look at a guy like Isaiah Thomas, not going to win, but you throw his name out there a little bit. What do you think? Is there a guy, like, out of left field, the most kind of absurd name that you think might pop up with a couple of votes this year?
I mean, who knows if you get some, you know, you mentioned Isaiah, so maybe in Boston you got some local media that's been, I mean, we're all human, mm-hmm. right? So if you see them all year long, it's hard. You know, you go to vote again, if you're having a busy day and you're not taking it maybe as seriously as you should, and you kind of just go, man, Isaiah's been great, I'm gonna just forget it, I'm voting Isaiah. You know, maybe that kind of thing happens. John Wall, I think, along the same lines, could get a little bit of love. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I don't know. You know, I don't see, I mean, who knows? That you have guys like, if the Clippers had won a handful more games, I could see, like, there's always folks who look at Chris Paul and say, when you talk about value, then, you know, you can make that argument, because they, year in, year out, the Clippers, when he's on the floor, are just, you know, monumentally better than they are when he's off the floor. And then, you know, the guys we keep talking about that are in the mix, the LeBrons and the Kawhis, are going to get some support. I think LeBron's media support, if I had to guess, will be significantly stronger than the front office support that we talked about in the past, where I had kind of pulled front office guys and LeBron didn't get a ton of love. So I think in general, though, Nate, you're going to have – I would hope you would have less of that, because you have so many quality candidates that, you know, it's tight enough. We don't need the stuff coming in from the outside.
Sam Amick, USA Today, joining us. I agree that even if I'm leaning towards Westbrook with my vote that doesn't exist, I can sit here and make an absolutely fantastic argument for any of those four guys, LeBron, Kawhi, Russell, and James. But could this, a year like this, maybe create some sort of a functionality in the future where you guys would have maybe an easier road out and have co-MVPs? Because I don't know how the hell you put Russell Westbrook over LeBron James, who's having career highs in rebounds and assists and won the thing last year with less numbers, or how you can tell me that the Spurs without Kawhi Leonard are going to be better off than the Rockets without James Harden. I honestly, Sam, don't know how you actually come down and pick an MVP.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of the rules, the only way that's happening is you know, if the vote is literally a deadlock, if the tally comes down to a complete tie, then you're looking at co-MVPs. Other than that, we don't have any mechanism to make that happen. I mean, maybe it's something to discuss going forward, but you know, the way it's set up right now, that's the only way to make it happen. And I, you know, some of the factors you're talking about, Dave, that's why this debate becomes so circular, because once you start leaning one direction and you make a strong point in support of one guy or against one guy, you know, then the next factor seems to inevitably sway the opposite direction. Like you mentioned Kawhi. Now, again, full disclosure, you know, I don't think, you know, I'm not seriously at this point considering Kawhi anymore as number one. And one of the main things is, we've talked about it, playmaking and the absence of it, and I'm giving respect to the other three guys and the fact that offensively they not only score the ball at a high level, but they, you know, they make their offenses go, and that's just not the case with Kawhi. The other thing that's making that decision easier, as great as he is defensively, and I had a lot of fun with this yesterday, I sat down with Draymond Green to debate Defensive Player of the Year, and it's a thing that we're going to put out next week. And I was showing him Kawhi's numbers, and they're very odd and they're very strange. Like, as great as he is, the Spurs on the defensive end are significantly better when he's off the floor this season.
Yeah.
And is so there's a part of you that says, well, that's garbage, that's BS. You know, you can't pay too much attention to that. But because the race is so tight, admittedly, you find yourself going, well, I don't know why the hell the numbers say that, but that does make the decision easier. Like, Harden, Westbrook, LeBron, when they're off the floor, their teams are falling apart, and that's just not the case with Kawhi.
Sam Amick, USA Today, joining us this morning on The Drive. Sam, I want to get into the Kings matchup, obviously, tonight. They're playing the Warriors, and this is a game that really no one has expectations for other than that the Kings are probably going to get killed tonight. And sure, using that terminology was on purpose, because that is Matt Barnes' intention tonight, is to kill the Kings. I'm sure you saw his quotes come out. This is kind of a weird conversation, in the sense that, you know, you want guys to, you always expect anybody on any team to, their opponent is the enemy. But what is the thing with Matt Barnes in terms of how things worked out with the Kings? I don't think it's really any different than any other team that he's ever played for. This is just who Matt Barnes is.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't talked to Matt about it. I did see his comments. You know, I read the piece. Jason Jones had done a nice job a few weeks ago connecting with Matt. If I had to guess, it's probably a really safe guess. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about the after the trade, the character press release that went out from the Kings. And I think while most had said that that was aimed at DeMarcus, you know, I think DeMarcus and Matt over time, for obvious reasons, kind of, you know, they got lumped into the same bag. And Matt obviously takes that personally. So I don't know. I mean, at this point in life, I don't know why Matt's kind of taking that tact. You know, you're with the Warriors, you're in a better spot. But he's obviously taking it personally. And who knows behind the scenes what the dialogue was like on his way out the door. You know what I mean? Like I had asked Matt not too long after he joined the Warriors about, you know, said, hey, could you take me through this whole experience? And at that time, he didn't really go for the hot take route. He even shared how with, you know, he kind of made it sound like when he talked to Vlade Divac that, you know, well, they knew I wanted to compete, that I wasn't in the mode of rebuilding, and after trading DeMarcus, that's what they were going to do. So he tried to kind of put some lipstick on the pig and make it sound like it was a mutual decision. Obviously it wasn't, you know, and now you kind of get more, I think, the real, where it's, you know, he takes it personally that he got booted out the door. So we'll see. I mean, it's a good take to have when you know that you're now on the team that is probably going to kill your former team. It's not a real, he's not exactly out on a limb making this kind of a prediction.
Sam, you got a few teams at the bottom of the West vying for the opportunity to get swept by the Warriors. And even though that might be mostly irrelevant, we get hung up with all this other stuff. I'm just kind of curious. Of those, like, you got the Nuggets and Blazers right there, and then kind of off in the distance a little bit, the Mavericks and the Pelicans. For your money, who do you think's going to end up coming out of that? And how have the Mavericks managed to make kind of a late push here under the radar?
I mean, first of all, Nate, come on. The Nuggets, let's not forget, just put up like 190 points on the Cavs.
Yeah.
You know, that's a Cavs discussion. But holy Toledo, the Cavs are not defending anybody. Denver, yeah, here's the problem with Denver. Fun team. Mike Malone, our old friend, doing a great job. But their schedule is just brutal.
Brutal.
And it's brutal. They are road heavy. They are. You know, strength schedule-wise, yeah, really good teams. That, and I'm trying to cheat here and look at the standings. So they, what do we got here? They're one game ahead of the Blazers. The Mavs can't. That's too much ground, in my opinion, to make up
for
the
bad
Mavs
team.
I think the Blazers, though, I think are probably going to sneak in there. They look like a team on fire, even with Denver having that good game against Cleveland. I kind of like the idea that the Damian Lillard is salvaging a little bit his season. You know, this since the All-Star break, he's second in the NBA in scoring. He's shooting like 45% from three-point range. He's just been on fire and trying to get those guys into the playoffs. So I think the Blazers probably sneak in, but we'll see. I mean, the Nuggets are going to have to really play some fantastic basketball to handle that schedule. And for to your point about the Warriors and the matchup, I don't know who the Warriors would rather see. I tend to think probably Denver. You have a team in Denver that has zero playoff experience. The Blazers, had a down year, but this is a team that got to the second round last year. It's a team that's playing better ball. It's a team that last year in the second round, gave the Warriors we always kind of frame it as, one of the more competitive five-game series you're going to ever see. Good games. And then with Jusuf Nurkić coming their way, ironically, from the Nuggets at the trade deadline, he's been really, really good. So they're a different team than they were the first half of the season. They're not going to take the Warriors, I don't think, to six or seven games. But when you have Kevin Durant at that time coming, back, trying to get in a rhythm, you want as little resistance as possible. And I think that would probably be Denver instead of Portland if that's the way the Warriors looked at it.
USA Today, Sam Amick joining us. Got about a minute left, Sam, but I want to get this to you. As far as I'm concerned, USA Today has one writer, and it's Sam Amick, but apparently there's other people there. And you came on last week and talked about an article you had just put out about LeVar Ball and talking to other GMs and whether or not that would have an effect on his draft position. Andrew Joseph, one of your colleagues, wrote an article that I thought was fascinating yesterday, I believe, talking to Stephen Gilling.
That's an old colleague of mine.
Oh, is it now?
Well, yeah, hey, worked in Phoenix. Yeah.
I went to elementary school with him, as a matter of fact.
That's funny.
I didn't. Chino Hills basketball head coach, Stephen Gilling.
I believed you, by the way.
Did you? Yeah, Katie knows me too well. So he talked about the relationship, or lack thereof, between LeVar and Coach Gilling, and the coach came out and had some pretty crazy quotes about how LeVar was just an absolute bully ass towards especially the second half of the season. So when you hear stuff like that and combine that with since last week, and you wrote that article, LeVar going after LeBron James, does that change the tune even a little bit in your head that, maybe this guy's a little bigger of a problem than we thought?
No, because he is a bigger problem than we thought, but it's still, I think, in a vacuum, it's a LeVar problem. It's not a Lonzo Ball problem.
Sure.
Because in the meantime, Lonzo's gone out and looked like the guy people thought he was in the tournament. He's got Jason Kidd saying pretty incredible things about him. Like, well, I appreciate being compared to Lonzo, but he might wind up being better than me, which got my attention.
Wow.
He's a fantastic ball player. I agree with it. And this is something I'm stealing from Facebook. I'd give credit if I could remember who said it, but someone on Facebook the other day had mentioned that the problem is, and this is not going to kill Lonzo's career, but setting that expectation where LeVar is, that's where it's going to hurt Lonzo. Because instead of saying, gosh, this guy is just fantastic, and he's up there maybe even with the Jason Kidd, now it's like, unless he's Magic Johnson, he's a failure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The way that LeVar is talking about him, you always want to, you want to buy low and sell high. And that's not what LeVar is doing. He's doing the exact opposite.
You can read Sam Amick at USA Today. Follow him on Twitter as well. The best in the business, buddy. Appreciate your time, and have fun making those eggs.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, right. Sam.
Take care. I think the guy who's talking about it said that on Facebook was Chip Schaefer.
Yeah.
Chip Schaefer said that.
You're so stupid, Dave. Chip.
We'll break when we
Larry
come back.
Wayne Schaefer Jr.
Here we go. We've got our sound we've been promising. From LeVar Ball and Stephen A. Smith. And we have an update. Stephen A. Smith spoke today, as a matter of fact.
You're kidding.
About taking an L, perhaps. We'll get to all that next. You're not going to want to miss this audio on The Drive. It's better than anything we're going to say. Sports 1140 KHDK.